Welcome to Holding Center, a podcast created to help you own and hold center stage, not only on show day, but also in your life. I'm your host, Ashley Markham, owner of Myo Strength, and joined with me is my co-host, Ashley Spoker, owner of B&B Fit. Let's hold center.
What's going on?
Dude, I'm exhausted today.
Okay, I am too. And I'm glad you said that because I'm dragging ass. Are you dragging ass?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because I'm trying to pull caffeine, which is fine, but I don't know. So I think this is part of my problem too, is I feed my child at 10 p.m. So he sleeps from 10 until 7 in the morning, but he goes to bed at 7. So I wake him up a little bit, feed him, and he goes right back to bed. A
little nightcap.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, they call it a dream feed.
Little macro cap.
So typically from 7 to 10 or 7 to 9:30, I'm kind of just reading, relaxing, wrapping up some work things, cleaning up. But lately I put him to bed and then I go to sleep the last couple of nights. And then I'm waking up at 10 for 45 minutes, an hour to feed him, clean up after that, and then get resettled in bed. So I wonder if that's why I'm tired, because it's disrupting. Cause I'm out.
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah. So I set an alarm, I wake up, and then it takes me a little while. And then I feel like I just don't get back into that deep sleep, and my sleep cycles aren't as good.
Yeah.
So I'm I need to stop falling asleep and just sleep from 10 to 7 and be done with it, versus taking that little 2 hour cat nap or hour and a half cat nap before I go to bed. So I'm gonna try tonight. But like I said, I'm just dragging ass, and the weather's changing and it's cold, and
yeah.
Caffeine intake is down, and
I have two questions. May I interject?
Yeah.
Okay. So one, is he completely on solid foods, or are you you're not breastfeeding anymore, right? Okay. So you're done breastfeeding. So what is his last meal?
No, so I am still breastfeeding.
Oh, you are. So you're breastfeeding then at 10.
Yeah. Which I know I said I was going to stop. So no, he's on. So essentially, I actually just looked this up last night. That's funny. So food under the age of one is just for fun. So essentially, they should be on breast milk or formula, whatever you feed your child, for that whole entire first year.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily need human food under one. They should be getting all their nutrients from breast milk. It's quote unquote just for fun, to get them textured and learn how to eat, because apparently at one, you can just switch them to cow's milk. So I'm like, okay, so you're just supposed to wake up on your kid's first birthday. They're supposed to eat all this food, have cow's milk, and be done. So it makes sense, is to kind of make that transition. But I saw for 10-month-old, it's supposed to be 3 human food a day, and then 4 or 5 bottles. And I was like, okay. So we do 2 human food meals a day, and we probably do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bottles or 5 breastfeeding sessions, and then that 10 o'clock one. So we do 6. So essentially he eats 24 ounces of breast milk a day, which is average for his age, but he doesn't eat those 3 meals. So I'm like, oh. But to answer your question, which I think is where you were going, is so he eats his dinner at 5 p.m. and then I breastfeed him at 6:30 and then again at 10.
So he sounds like an off-season bodybuilder. He's got his solid meals and then his fucking whey shakes.
Dude, that's hilarious. And it's because we're, and you know me and you, obviously, we're so scheduled. I'm 7:30, we have our shake. 9:30,
oh my God,
we have
our shake.
Yeah, 11 p.m. or 11 a.m., we have meal one. I'm literally. And I'm now that you say that, I'm this is probably insane.
Oh my God.
Their moms are probably well, a lot of people listen are bodybuilders. So they're oh yeah, that's probably normal. That's a good idea. But normal life people are probably what the fuck? I'm meal one, 11:30, meal two.
Dog, you are nursing the next fucking Samson Dauda. You don't even know it.
I either want him to be a bodybuilder, or I want him to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu and compete in that.
Oh, hell yeah. Get him.
Dude, that's hard.
It is. But second question,
yeah.
Does he actually sleep through the night now? Is it oh, you're in that stage?
Ooh. He pretty much has been since he was 5 or 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we put him to bed at 7 p.m. And like I said, I wake him up to feed him at 10, but he mm-hmm. doesn't even open his eyes. He literally just eats. And then when he's done, he just passes right back out, and he'll sleep till 6:15, But I usually don't go in there till 7. He kind of just like either falls back asleep till then, or he'll just, I don't know, do whatever he does in his crib for 45 minutes. But yeah, so he sleeps through like the whole night.
I love that for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm like coaching another new mama, and she's got a 7-month-old. She's like, yeah, my kid's waking up like 3 to 4 times a night, sometimes 5 or 6. And I'm like, oh, damn, like that's rough. And I remember that. But like also too, I mean, it's not my place to like intervene on how you parent your kid. But like we did sleep training, and a lot of people hate that and think
Question.
It's hard. Yeah.
So remind you, I don't have a kid. So what is sleep training?
So sleep training is like, you pretty much like train your kid on how to sleep, because one thing I've learned is like kids have to learn how to do everything. They don't know. They literally don't know. So you have to like teach them and, you know, support them through different, obviously, learning things here. So they don't necessarily know how to fall asleep. Isn't that weird?
It's so weird.
Oh, it's like so, well, it's like, it's just so awesome to see. It's like, wow, your kid doesn't even know how to walk, and they have to learn how to do that. We just walk, you know? So it's just cool to like see all that. But like sleeping is one of those things too. Like they have to learn how to do that. So sleep training, there's a bunch of different methods here. It's more so the fact of like how to get your kid to learn to fall asleep and stay asleep. And if they wake up in the middle of the night, what do they do then? So there's different methods. We kind of did like a method where you kind of, they wake up, if they're crying, you don't run in there right away. You kind of let them soothe themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, like fuss it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people think that's barbaric. They're the method that they have online, it's like you let them do it for 5 minutes, and then you go in there and you like pat their butt, make sure they have their binky, tell them it's okay, walk out. And then you let them go for 10 minutes, and then you let them go for 15. So I couldn't do it for that long. So we were like every 5 minutes, and 5 minutes felt like an hour. But looking, like there was times we had to actually do it on a week that Alex was on vacation, because I would run in there and pick him up right away.
Oh yeah. But
yeah. It's not teaching him how to self-soothe. So I would sit in bed and I would start crying, and Alex would be with the baby crying. Yeah. Because it was so hard for me, like that motherly instinct. I'm like, he just needs my comfort. So, I think it really did help with sleeping and learning. Cause now he's like I said, he'll wake up at 6:15. He may cry. He'll find his binky. He'll put it in his mouth and he'll lay back down and go back to bed. Same thing. Like a few nights ago, he woke up at 1 o'clock, and within like 2 minutes, he was back to sleep. Versus like me getting up and running across the hall and picking him up. So yeah, that's how we like pretty much have taught him how to sleep. And then like he does really good with like soothing himself back to bed. And I'm very grateful for that, because as a bodybuilder, I need my pocket sleep.
I mean, just as a person, you need your sleep. Yeah. I love that. And honestly, you answered that question so perfectly. And it kind of ties into our topic and of ownership, right? You are teaching your kid how to self-soothe. You are building up his even though like he's a baby, right? Like, and he doesn't really understand exactly what he's doing. You're teaching him how to self-soothe. People, our innate ability to self-soothe has been completely lost, where we want people to coddle us. We want people to give us all the answers, to give us the solutions to our problems, without learning how to do it in ourselves and having that ownership and that self-awareness to follow through on what is my problem. And therefore, once I know my problem, now I can create my solution. But the idea of self-soothing from a child, like that is so freaking important. And I feel like we just lose that as adults.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And like, I think also too, that plays a role into like coaching too. Like people want to be coddled. They want to be told, oh, it's okay. You didn't hit your things. It's okay. You didn't drink all your water or get your steps, or you didn't work out at all. And that's fine. Like it's okay. It's okay. Like we'll say, great job. Here's your participation pin for the week. And it's like, no, you need to acknowledge that, like, hey, things, I could be better at this, right? I could do better. I need that ownership. And like, not only as like an athlete, but like Ash and I were kind of talking about before we started recording this, was just like ownership as like a coach too, right? And I think that that plays in a role of like having a good relationship and rapport and trust. Same thing with like my kid, like he trusts me that at some point I may come in and help him, you know, that I'm not going to leave him astray, that I'm not going to be like, okay, you suck, figure it out, you know, see you next check-in, see you next Monday morning. Like,
yep.
No, like, okay, like, all right. I'm going to help you, but like you need to at least figure something out on your own. You need to be accountable for it. Like you need to understand that like this does take a period of you being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's like gentle parenting and like gentle coaching. Like it's like, okay, when you decide to change, there's going to be literally growing pains. Like I feel like the parenting analogy is so important when it comes to relating to being a coach and being an athlete too. And obviously there are lines that cannot be drawn, or there that should be drawn when it comes to like, you know, certain boundaries we don't cross as coaches, because although yes, we want to give you the confidence and the abilities to, you know, learn how to habit stack and learn to lay the foundation so you can meet your goals. And obviously a parent wants to raise their child to be successful. Like it's something where there's a lot of key things that I think we should take away from like parenting and understanding that like it is important to be patient, but is not okay to accept mediocrity when it comes to a goal that you said was important to you, right? Like when you hire a coach, like hopefully this doesn't happen. Hopefully like a coach doesn't put a gun to your head and be like, fucking hire me. Like, no, that doesn't happen. It's in your brain. You want help. You want to be coached. You have a goal that you want to be held accountable for, that you don't know how to get there on your own. So you want someone else's expertise. You want their knowledge. You want their support. You want that accountability. You signed up for this, right? And that is so important to recognize that you took ownership that like, hey, my life sucks or whatever. I don't like what I'm doing. I need help. So that's step one, right? But then step two, and the most important part is following through, right? Following through on whatever programming protocols that your coach is giving you, right? And having that communication with them so that way you guys are building up your relationship. You are building that respect, that trust, much like Ash and her kid, like her kid trusts her, right? And you have to trust your coach. Your coach also has to trust you. And I know we're talking about both being as like a coach and an athlete, and like, I have fallen short with Austin. I've also fallen short with my athletes. And so it's like, okay, rather than just like flagellating myself, being like, you fucking suck, it's like, why did I fall short? Analyze the situation, remove your emotion, analyze the situation. Then from there, okay, I fell short because I didn't set boundaries, or I, you know, didn't prepare accordingly. Then how do I fix the situation? I need to set boundaries. I need to plan accordingly. And like, that's how you start to take your fuck ups and create like setups.
And I think like, honestly, like building that rapport and like having that strong line of like communication with your athletes and coaches, like super important. Like, so we all know, and this is like a fact, and I don't care, you're going to probably rebuttal me, but like Ash is smarter than me. Ash knows more than me. 100%. And we know that on paper, Ash has a lot more knowledge. Ash has been, no, I know. No, this is dead serious, you know, and it is a compliment too.
And I appreciate it. First of all, thank you. Thank you.
And like, I'm still learning, but it is never beneath me when a client, perfect example today is I have a client who keeps having these low blood sugars, like wakes up 50, eats a meal an hour later, is only 70, like postprandial. I'm like, all right, like not good. And I know to the point of like what's kind of going on and things like that. And I tried a few things to fix it. And, you know, she checks in today and she's like, well, those things didn't work. Okay. Well, guess what? I don't know what else to do at this moment. So like I said, Ash and I were talking about it, and I'm talking about it with Connor, the head coach of Classic. And I'm just like, what do we do? Because I don't know. And I told her, I said, hey, all right. Like I reached out to Connor to get a better idea. And like me being honest with her opens up that communication for like when there's a time where, you know, she's falling short or she doesn't know something or she misses something. It's like, okay, well, I can tell Ash, because Ash has been honest with me when she doesn't know something, or when she's, you know, kind of at a loss for words, or when she messes up. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, I thought the first plan was going to work. And not saying that, you know, it was like I did a total mess up there. It's just like it didn't work, which kind of sucks. But like also too, it's like, I need more help. And I'm not, it's not beneath me to fucking admit that to my athletes, right? And it's a learning curve, and same with them. And it's like, okay, but you have to take that ownership, right? Mm-hmm. I can't just be like, oh, well, maybe it didn't work because you didn't follow the plan, or you're not honest, or like placing blame elsewhere. And like, that's where we fall short. And it's like, I try and instill in my athletes, it's like, hey, like, I don't know everything. I would love to know everything. And that's why like me being honest with you is like, ooh, okay, well, not the best idea. Let's fix it. Right. And it opens up, like I said, that line for them to be honest with me too. And when we're both honest and both building that rapport, like that's where we start to have like a lot of progress, like not only in our relationship as client athlete coach, but like also too within like their health and their physical well-being too, which is cool because that's what we want as coaches.
Absolutely. And like when you instill like confidence in your athlete and you build up that trust and rapport, that is so important. Like when they start to also gain self-awareness from how you are coaching, like that extends far beyond just like bodybuilding, lifestyle, whatever. Like it helps them to excel in every other area of your life. And I get they're just hiring you for maybe physique goals or health goals. And again, that's not a bash. Like that's not a bad thing to hire a coach. But when you're also able to impact them on that higher level, that's also really cool because they probably didn't have that setting to begin with. And again, like they're going to be able to impact their world and their community in a much more positive space. And as much as like, maybe I know more than you, maybe I don't. I don't know, because you, to play devil's advocate, you also have a nursing background. So you know way more about nursing and, you know, the healthcare system than I do. Like I just have an ex-phys background and some nutrition, some diabetic stuff. And then I'm our Lord and Savior, Austin Stout. That's like just what I have in my arsenal, right? But you also have experience that I'll never have. You have mom experience, right? And like your patience, your willpower, your mental fortitude, that gets tested far beyond what I'll ever experience. And so I think it's really important to also acknowledge that everyone has their own unique strengths and their own unique experiences and perspectives. And when you acknowledge that you do not know it all, instead of like maybe feeling like a competition, it's more of like a camaraderie. Like that's how we make the coaching space better. That's how we make our athletes better. That's how we make ourselves better. And that I think is super powerful, right? Because there are questions that I'll have for you about like nursing, because I work with nurses, much like you have a nursing schedule. And I'm like, yo, like, what does a nursing shift look like? Like, is there any breaks or something? How can I get the meals in? Like, I have no problem like taking off my smart cap just so I can absorb some of your experience. Because like, I don't sit on my ass all day, but like I take walks and stuff, but I'm not in a fucking hospital where people have bullet hole wounds or bedpans to change. Like my level of stress is very, very different. So you have a very unique, you know, perspective and experience that like I lean to heavily.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I actually like you saying that like makes me realize too, a lot of like other coaches and stuff have reached out to me, not only for like nursing and like what I do during my shifts, but like they want to know like what my mental and how I deal with like having an autoimmune and my gut health. A lot of people are just like amazed that my gut health was like fucking over a year long, like my health phase. And I was like, I was booked, man. Like, mm-hmm. You know, so I do get a lot of that because not only is that like a personal experience that like a lot of people want to know about, like how they can help their athletes more because it is a struggle. Right. Mm-hmm. So as far as like me knowing everything, it's like you said, like experience and knowledge, like they go hand in hand, but like everyone is different in their niche there. So I think, you know, like obviously when it comes down to it, it's like, it doesn't make you any less than or inability to help someone. Cause like, we're all here to come together and be a part of that.
Exactly. And also when you have that like self-awareness and ownership over like your shortcomings, it also helps you develop humility. And I know there's like sometimes controversy over like, oh, you shouldn't be fucking humble and yada, yada, yada. I think if you express humility, it makes you much more relatable and it opens up conversation rather than thinking you're like a supreme overlord dictator where it's like people don't want to talk to you because they're scared of you or they think they're beneath you. And like, that power dynamic for me just isn't how I like to coach. And it's certainly not how I like to build for friendships and stuff like that, because like, I am not a perfect human being. Like I have, you know, dropped the balls on many conversations between Ash and I, where it's like, listen, like I read that wrong. That's on me. But like when you're able to take ownership over a situation and instead of making it an argument, you make it something that actually strengthens your relationship, whether that is with a friend or a spouse, or especially your coach, like feedback, for example, is not meant to hurt you. It's not meant to harm you. It's to make you better. It's to make you feel like you have something to improve upon, right? And of course, feedback delivery is very important, right? Like, that is so important to understand how your athlete receives constructive feedback and how to guide them to, you know, implementing that feedback. I have some athletes, I can be like, yo, this was not it. This was not the set. Like, you're using momentum. Like, I can be a little bit more stern and direct versus some athletes. It's like, it makes them feel small. And so I legit got on a Wednesday. Got up at 5:30, right? I set an alarm to get up at 5:30 to have a 20-minute personal training session with one of my athletes she has come a long freaking way with training, right? Like, I'm so, so proud of her. And she also still has a long way to go. Like, she hasn't unlocked that, like, you know, that mental cap where your brain's like, oh no, this is too tough, right? She hasn't unlocked that yet. So I was like, listen, I'm going to give you like a 20-minute personal training session on the house. Don't worry about it. So we via WhatsApp using the video. And although she still didn't quite get it, honestly, my expectation was not to her to magically get it with just me, like, you know, encouraging her while she trained. My goal was to show her that, like, when you have someone like cheering for you, because clearly, like, a more direct, maybe harsher method wasn't her method of delivery. What we did find is her ability to say, try again. Like, what's the worst that can happen if you try another rep? You fail? Congratulations, you learned, right? She's also a mama. And I was like, what would happen if your kid just decided that it was too tough to learn how to ride a bike? Like, no, you wouldn't. No, like, you want to teach them how to learn, ride a bike, right? If they fall or get boo-boos, like, there's a solution for that. Training is no different. Like, when you just embrace the ability that you can try again, that you get to be stronger, get to build up your physique through your hard training, like, that is very powerful. That builds up your confidence and makes you feel like a better athlete. And also, because it shows you just how strong you really are, that confidence bleeds into other areas of your life. But it first starts with, like, hey, I need help. I'm still not grasping this. What can we do?
Yeah. And I think, like you said, is like your own perception of yourself, kind of like, you know, oh, like training is a perfect example, because it's like, I have a girl right now. You know, she is local to me and she's like, can we train legs together? Would you mind helping me in person? I was like, I don't really do in person. Mostly because I just don't have the time with my kid, but I was like, hey, if we're at the gym at the same time, I'll spot you and give you some tips. And obviously I'm reviewing your videos. And she's like, well, I just feel like my form is shit on everything. And I was like, well, why? Like, why are you feeling that way? And she's just like, well, I just feel like I watch your hip thrust video that you've been posting the last 2 weeks. And I'll admit I've been like an asshole about posting it. And she's like, it's not that good. I said, first of all, you just started with me 5 weeks ago. You haven't hip thrust before that. In the 5 weeks, you've made great progress. I have been sending hip thrust videos to my coach before I was even pregnant. So the last 3 fucking years. And that's how long it's taken me to get to where I am. Okay. And that's your perception. You sent me a video last week. It looked great. She's like, well, I can't go up and wait. Like, I'm nervous I'm going to get hurt. And it goes back to like, well, what happens if you just try 5 more pounds and see? If you do 2 reps and it doesn't feel right, that's fine. Bring the weight back down. You'll get there. 2 reps at a higher weight. Sweet. Next week, try 3. Try 4. That's all it fucking takes. And it's our own perception. It's like, you're sitting there saying that your hip thrust is trash, but I'm telling you that it's greatly improved since the last 2 weeks you told me. And it's like that of like, we're being our own worst like critic. And I know for me right now too, like personally, is I am struggling really hard with my intensity. I'm like, my intensity is trash. Mm-hmm. I don't have good training sessions. I can push myself harder. I'm not going as hard as I should be. And then I look back at my videos and I'm doing B stance RDLs with 85 pounds for 10 fucking reps, which is like a PR for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm practically shaking on my last 3 reps. And I'm like, I watch it back and I was like, okay, like that's great, but I could go harder, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, you can't right now. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like that perception of us being, you know, hard on ourselves, but then also too, like bringing it up to our coach to kind of have that reassurance, to build that confidence you were talking about of like, hey, either A, like, yeah, you should go up, or B, you're right where you need to be and you're going to continue to get better. Because either way, it's limiting, a limiting belief that you're creating for yourself.
It is. And I think that would be a good exercise if you don't mind being vulnerable. Why do you think that you're not pushing hard, or why do you think your intensity is trash?
I think mentally, I have a few blocks there, and I do reserve myself, and I know exactly why. One, because I barely got the chance to train till failure since my health phase, because I got pregnant right away. So I'm also very nervous that training to failure will throw my Hashimoto's into a fucking shitstorm because it's a stress. And then also too, when I came back postpartum, I trained really, really hard that first week, and I was so sore to the point where I couldn't walk and I couldn't pick up my kid. So I know subconsciously, I think I'm holding myself back. And then I'm like, also too, at the same point, I think for me, mentally, I'm like, you need to be doing more because you can do more. But like physically, I don't think my body can when I watch those videos. So there's just a disconnect there. And I think maybe you can even realize that too. Like, have you ever been, because I think it's like opposite for me and you maybe, where like, you know how most people's mental quit first and they're like, oh, like I'm done. But like their body usually has like 5 or 6 more reps. I don't know if this is like it for you, but like for me, like I will try and keep pushing my body to do another rep, and my mind is like not done yet. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like in my mind, I'm like 10 more, 10 more. And then my body is like at 4. It's like, no, like you literally can't move. And my mind's like, no. Yeah. So I think like for me, like I got to the point where it's like kind of like backwards, but I think it plays into like, this is me being vulnerable. It's like my perfectionism, me being an overachiever. And like, obviously that's something I need to work on in therapy, because like physically my body is like, you can't, but my mind is like, drive it, like fucking go. And if you don't get it, you're not good enough.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I can relate wholeheartedly, especially because in my own experience, I'm kind of in that, I don't know what you want to call it, like not, it's not a training funk, because I am progressing, I am getting stronger, but like, it's the perception of, I still feel like I'm training like a pussy since I have started dry needling and acupuncture. Like my body is changing, right? Like my muscles that were so freaking tight for so long are like learning to relax, but like, there are still things that aren't quite right. And so like my whole left side, dude, my hip right now feels like it's up here. Feels like it's up to my ears. Like, obviously it's not, you can't even see my legs. But when I'm training, if I'm doing a leg press, instead of it feeling like squishy and glidey and fluid, it feels like cranking. Like it does not feel good. And so while I am trying to mentally push myself on like a leg press or a pendulum squat, like mentally I'm like, bitch, let's fucking go. But because it just like my body cannot produce more force right now, it's like, bitch, what are you doing? Right. But again, like it's a work in progress. It's something where it's like, meet yourself where you're at. It doesn't mean you can't elevate yourself. It doesn't mean you can't get better or want better or push harder. But right now, like you got shit you got to figure out. And like, again, that comes from having self-awareness and ownership of the situation where it's like, I'll get there. It's just going to take time.
Yeah. And I think it's like you said, like we have that owning, like me, like mentally is a problem, right? And versus like, you know, blaming it on whatever X, Y, and Z. And then like, I've even brought that up to my coach where it's just like, I don't feel like I'm training hard enough. And he's just like, well, why? Like you are, like, you know, and like having that conversation, but it just goes back to like, or even it could be the opposite where I do send a video and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm training hard as fuck. And it's like, no, dude, like you're using 10 pounds for RDLs and you do 3 reps. Like that's not hard. Right. Like you may have to have like that tough conversation with yourself of like, okay, I actually can do better. Right. You know, even with it, when it comes to like nutrition or sleep or anything like that, like you have to have that conversation with yourself first. Or even like maybe your coach has to, you know, reiterate it to you like multiple times. And like, it goes back to like the delivery of it too, like on our end, as like how you approach that athlete when you say that and say things like that. And it's like, you know, for me, it's generally like a curiosity thing. And like, I mean, you just did it to me. It's like, hey, like, why do you feel you're not training hard enough? Or where is this coming from? Because if we can understand where it's coming from, then maybe we can like try a different solution or figure out what needs the work on there, and like be like, hey, why don't we try this? You know, like, perfect example for me is like, okay, you feel like you're not training hard enough. Why don't you go back and look at your logbook and see that you're going up in weight and you're going up in reps? Okay, well, there's facts, there's data that proves it.
Yep.
You know, same thing with sleep. Okay, well, you say you're anxious, you're overeating this week, and your sleep was trash. Okay, well, why don't we improve sleep here and see how the rest of it stumbles out, right? So it's just kind of like one of those things, like, where are the facts laying and where can you take ownership and like be like, okay, like, yeah, this is a problem. I can do better. I need to be honest with myself, because at the end of the day, you're the only one that's going to be able to make yourself better.
Mm-hmm. And I think a good perspective on both being a coach and being an athlete is when we ask questions, it is to seek clarity and curiosity. So that way we know how to make the decision of how to help. And the same way, if you ask your coach a question, let it come from a good place. When you're asking your coach a question, make sure it comes from a place of how can I better execute? How can I better understand? So that way I can get the best results. I can give you the best performance. I can give myself the best performance first, like asking for judgmental reasons or.
I'm just going to say like emotional, because like I've done this before and I don't know if it's inappropriate. Maybe you've done it too, but like, has a client ever asked you like, well, what do you like? Do you think I look really good in these photos? Or like, do you think like, I like something so, or like, you know, like prep's a good one. Like they'll be like shredded as fuck and they'll be like, wow, I look really, really, really fat today. I won't even acknowledge that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's so subjective, and it's like, especially in a prep state, like, I'm sorry, like, I'm not trying to like sound like, oh, I'm invalidating your feelings, but like, dude, when you're in prep, like, just your self-perception is just completely trashed, right? And like, when it comes to especially physique athletes, because, you know, at a certain point, it's like, you are being judged on the physique. So whether it's like off-season or contest prep, it's like, you want to hear the athlete and be like, hey, I'm sorry you feel that way, but like, we're right where we need to be.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't even like indulge in the like, oh my God, like, no, you're not fat. You're just seeking validation. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, and that's not what I'm here for. And like, there just comes like a point in a time where like, it doesn't even matter like what anyone else thinks, right? Like, a perfect example is a lot of people when they get pregnant, they have a lot of body dysmorphia, they hate their bodies, or in the off season, that's another good comparison, when they gain a lot of weight. And you could have so many people be like, oh my God, you look so beautiful. Like, you're great. Like, this is fantastic. Like I said, pregnancy is a good one. Like, you look, what do they fucking say? Oh, you're
usually it's glowing. Yep.
But it doesn't matter unless like you fucking believe it as a person.
Yeah.
Right. Like, when I was 165 pounds before I got fucking pregnant, which was the highest weight I've ever been in my entire life, I was pretty comfy there. Like, I ended up like towards the end, like just falling in love with my body and the fact that it actually was healthy, because I was so unhealthy for so long. It didn't matter what the scale said. It didn't matter what size clothes I was wearing. It didn't matter that none of my fucking clothes fit from before. It all that mattered was like that I felt good and I was so proud and happy of my body. But, you know, there were times when I was 110 pounds and I hated my body, and people would be like, you look so good. You look shredded. You look great. Like, you're about to get on stage. But like, none of that mattered because I didn't believe it. You know, like, I wasn't happy with myself. So like, things like that is like, yeah, sure, your coach can like reassure you that we're on the right path, that, you know, I understand you're having these feelings, but it doesn't really, and I think that's like why I don't really engage, because it doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, I'm your coach. And like, my thing is like, I'm looking for progress. I'm not looking for like fat versus thin. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, I don't even know what the fuck that is, right? Because everybody's so goddamn different. I mean, I do know what it means, but like, essentially it's like, are we seeing progress, and not just physical progress? Like, is our day-to-day life getting better? Are we eating more whole foods? Does energy, sleep, digestion look better? Like, those are the things that I want to see improvements on and I care about. Sure, I care about your well-being, but like I said, like, in the reality, the perception, the emotional tie to it, like, I could tell you all fucking day that you don't look fat, even if you are 700 pounds. And you know what I'm saying? Like, is it really that meaningful unless you fucking believe it yourself?
Exactly. And I think going back to your example of like, you felt like great when you were 165 versus you felt like dog shit at 110. It's like, you felt good because you were also focusing on what mattered, like what truly mattered. And I know it's hard to talk about like contest prep because yes, you're focusing on things that matter, but you're still going to feel like dog shit because of the extreme of the sport, right? It's one thing to like feel like dog shit because like you're doing an extreme sport. It's another thing to feel like dog shit because you're not, honest to God, taking care of yourself, especially in like an off-season setting where it's like you want to feel good and focus on what matters. And you were focusing on what mattered, right? That's why like you felt good. You looked good. You were doing all the right things. So like, who cares what the scale said?
Dude, that's so funny. Like, it just makes me think of like right now. Okay, so right now I woke up like 136 pounds and I was like, at 165, I say I felt my fucking best because I was taking absolute better care of myself. Like, I'm taking really good care of myself right now, but like, I started out with this podcast. I was like, I've been abusing caffeine for the last month, so I kind of feel shitty because I'm not taking the best care of myself with caffeine. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm 30 pounds less. I have way less body fat. My body composition is a lot better. I look better. Inflammation is down, but like, I still don't feel the greatest because like, I'm not taking the best care of myself. Like I said, my sleep's disrupted. I've been abusing fucking caffeine out the asshole. So it's like, and then like mental stress, I'm just like not doing as well as I could be because I have a child, obviously. But it's just crazy because it's like 30 pounds later, oh, you think you'd be like happier or you'd be more comfortable or life problems go away. It's like, no, I'm just doing shit to my body that my body doesn't like and I feel like garbage. You do.
Dude, that's so true. I mean, like, that's relatable. Like, I was just as miserable when I was morbidly obese at 260 than I was when I dropped literally half my fucking body weight in a year when I was deeply anorexic at 125. I was just as miserable, only went from a double XL to a double X small. Mm-hmm. Fucking still just as miserable, if not even more so, because now instead of, like, enjoying, like, food, now I, like, cried if I hadn't eaten an apple. So if anything, I was more miserable at 125. But now it's just like, dude, I'm vibing. I'm living life, right? And, like, I know my coach has my back. I know my friends love me. I know my husband loves me. Like, I'm focusing more on what matters. And I am the happiest I've ever been. My physique is the most responsive it's ever been. And like, that speaks volumes. But it first started with me having ownership as to why I was missing out, why my body wasn't responding, why I wasn't happy, why I wasn't feeling good. Ownership and self-awareness of what you are doing to yourself, right? And even if you were in just the worst of worst circumstances, right? Because obviously everyone has a different life. Even if you have a circumstance that you just cannot get out of, how can you change your perception of it? You're in a job that you hate, but as of right now, let's say like you have to do it to support your family. How can you change your perception, right? How can you make the best out of a bad scenario? That is so important because a lot of the things that we're talking about, if you can't, honest to God, change your situation, but you can change your mindset, that is a big key part of stress management. So you have ownership, accountability, and then you have action, like following through on how to make the best life possible for yourself, how to make your body the most responsive for contest prep, how to make it the most responsive if you're just, you know, general health and wellness.
Yeah, like perception's everything, dude. And like that comes from like that initial like ownership, like knowing you're a fucking pessimist versus like an optimist. Mm-hmm. And like, sure, there's like life stressors and stuff, but like if you're someone who's always like, oh man, like I like this sucks, like I have to go and get steps versus like, wow, I get to walk, I get to be outside, fresh air is great for me, the sun is great for me, like it's your fucking perception. Yep. And it's like, oh my god, I'm so overwhelmed because of this and this. It's like, I used to be a very overwhelmed person and now I'm just like, fuck it, man, like, you know what, because I'm not gonna let it stress me the fuck out. And like that took ownership as like me making a big deal. Like I was creating so much drama in my life because, and like I had to sit back and be like, okay, like it's really not that big of a fucking deal. And then like that's how things started to actually get easier. Like I enjoyed the process, my like perception was a lot better. Like I, and it comes from like owning that you're the fucking problem versus like, you know, you'd be like, oh, well, my coach has me eating all this food, has me doing cardio, has me working out. They're, you know, this is stressful, this is hard. But like, why? Is it because of the way that you're looking at it? Because you look at it as a chore versus like, wow, like I actually want to move my body and things like that. And that comes down to like having that talk with yourself of like, am I the fucking problem? Because 90% of the time we fucking are.
Dog, and it's great that you're the problem because that means you're the solution, right? Like, that's what people don't understand is like when you lack self-awareness and you don't have that ownership and you like play the victim or you blame others, it's like you are just going to continue to sink. Like you are in your own fucking shit pit, your own fucking quicksand, and you have no one to blame but yourself. But when you start to point the finger at yourself in the mirror, instead of pointing at others, you're like, you know what? I'm going to get out of this shit pit. I don't know how. Maybe you have to hire someone. Maybe you got to lean on friends. Maybe you got to do all these other things. And yeah, it's going to be freaking hard, but like, it's going to be worth it because then you're going to live the life that you actually want to live instead of complaining about it because you don't.
Yeah. And like, I literally fucking hate excuses. I cannot fucking stand them because I'm such a solutions person. And I don't know if that comes from like nursing, coaching, just being like an athlete. It's like, okay, like this isn't working, but like what will? Like, let's figure it out versus like, ah, oh, man, that's not working. Oh, well.
Oopsie daisy.
Oh, well, my fucking ass. Like, figure it out. Like, how are you just going to stop there?
Ash says, oh, well, my asshole.
But that's literally like driving down the road and the road is closed and you're like, all right, might as well just turn my car off and just sit here the rest of my life. Like, find the fucking detour. There's usually a goddamn sign that's orange and it's bright and it's lit up and it says fucking go left. Like, come on, take the detour. Like, why would you just stop there? Like, the road's closed. I can't get to my destination. Can't move. Can't do anything. It's like, okay, that's a you problem because there's a sign that says go left and that's the solution. And take it and see where you go, because I guarantee you it's still going to get you to where you need to be versus you just standing in your own fucking way.
Dude, like that's a great analogy because that drives home the point of you either just need to like fucking make sure you have your car in four-wheel drive and just haul ass on the closed road, or you take a detour. So even if you can't change your situation, you can just suck it up, buttercup, and drive through, because like the only way out is through. Or it's like, you know what? I really can't change that this road is closed. I don't have a, I drive a fucking Toyota Yaris IA and I'm not going to be able to get through this mud pit. But hey, orange sign, detour, change my mindset. I keep going.
Mm-hmm. And like, there shouldn't be a reason for like an excuse, if you ask me. Like, cause there's always fucking solutions. And like, dude, I swear to God, like I love getting like, that's where like creativity comes from. Like, I love getting creative, like with solutions and stuff like that, like endless, endless possibilities, like hundreds of them. And I'm going to find them. I'm going to use them all. Fuck it. I love it.
You're like the Ash Ketchum of Pokemon, only you're like, you're creative. I want to catch them all, catch all these solutions.
Literally, because I love it. I just love, I love problem solving. I think that's like the problem. It's like, not the problem, but I'm just like, I love it. So like, if my athletes check in, like they already know to say, like, it's so funny. They'll be like, oh, I didn't do this because of this, this, and this. Well, I know that that's an excuse. Yeah, you know, because I'm going to tell you it's a fucking excuse. Mm-hmm. And then they'll already have the solution for this week coming. I'm like, I love it because I've taught you guys so well that like, you guys see me on Instagram with how much shit I typically have to do. And I get it done because I problem solve. I do a bunch of shit, try a bunch of shit out to make it easier for me. And some weeks I fail.
Yeah.
But I'm taking the detour, man, because I'm still getting there. Ain't nothing going to stop me. Is that a song?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. If not, you could just have AI create you a song.
Fuck AI.
Dude, I know. Same.
The podcast will probably get canceled because I said that now.
You go, nope. Cool. Yeah. What are you grateful for? And we'll end it here.
What am I grateful for? Grateful for you. Grateful for our podcast. And honestly, this week, I am very grateful that I have a nephew. I became an aunt. He came into this world 3 weeks early. And he is,
oh, wow,
healthy and beautiful and perfect. So I'm very grateful that my family is healthy and whole, and that my brother and his girlfriend get to experience parenthood just like we do. And it's awesome. So I'm very grateful for everything turned out the way that it was supposed to be. And we're all here and we're all healthy.
I love that. Well, congratulations, Auntie Ashley.
Thanks.
Auntie Spilks.
What's yours?
So I'm grateful that my friend bought me a game I'm grateful that Eric and I are playing it, and I think I've lost every game so far, and that's okay. That's okay. But it is getting better to where it's like we're not quite playing by the rules because we haven't done the 60-second thing yet because like
we don't do that.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel so better because I'm like, listen, I'm not there yet. Like my mental capacity, like I'm smart, but not like in that way. So like it takes me like an hour to like make a move.
No, we don't play that either. We don't play the 60 seconds because like by the time I pick up a tile and organize it on the tray, it's my 60 seconds is up. So
that's what I'm saying, dog. That's what I'm
we don't,
saying.
I forgot to tell you that. We don't use a timer, throw it out.
Thank God. Cool. Well, I'm thankful for games and playing, and I'm thankful that it is getting cooler because I know it's not great for like Ohio because it gets cold, but it is nice to go outside and not have like ass and tit sweat, you know, where you feel like you like have to take a shower every time you go on a walk outside.
Yeah, I know. I love that. Like, I love the cooler weather. It is like really chilly here in the morning, but I like it. I think it's good for my lungs. I don't know if that's true, but I tell
I
myself
would believe it. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. I'm voting yes.
We all vote yes. Let us know. Do you guys think cold air is good for your lungs? Yes or no? Or maybe. We could throw a maybe in there.
Ooh, spicy. All right, guys. Peace.
Adios.